this is Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today is an esteemed documentary filmmaker who's reported from all corners of the globe for BBC One's Panorama, Channel 4's Dispatches and many more, applying her investigative background to dig deep into some downright bizarre stories. Her first book, Sex, Robots and Vegan Meat, Adventures at the Frontier of Birth, Food, Sex and Death, provides a sideways look at some of the fundamental aspects of human life. Jenny Kleeman, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, in your television career, you've travelled the world, you've discovered some extraordinary stories. So why the shift in medium? Why write a book now?
I've always really loved writing. As well as making documentaries, I always used to write articles at the same time, long form articles. I've been writing for The Guardian for quite a long time. So I've always loved writing. But I felt that the kind of questions that I wanted to ask and the experience that I wanted to have would be better suited to a book, actually, in this case, even though it is a very visual story. I mean, my book is about four inventions that are going to change what it means to be human. And it's very much kind of reportage. I very much treat writing the book like I would making a documentary. The book is very much in scenes and it's very kind of visual about going in and describing things. Mm. But the beauty of a book is that you can really look at the issues and the ideas and the kind of intellectual history behind things in a way that you can't really with a piece of television. And I felt that these kinds of stories needed to be told in a slightly way, in a way that wasn't so reliant on the visual, even though they are very visual stories. Mm.
Well, let's look at some of those fundamental questions, starting with life. What if we could have babies without having to bear children? Tell us what you found out on that.
I found out that for years, human beings have been trying to engineer artificial wombs, and these are at the moment being developed to save the lives of very premature babies. Prematurity is the leading cause of death and disability among young children in the developed world. And so there's a concerted attempt to try and make technology improve, because at the moment we have incubators, but incubators treat premature babies like they're babies who've been born. An artificial womb treats them as fetuses that haven't been born yet, so that the process of gestation can continue. And of course, as we get better and better at doing that, as we get better and better at developing that technology, we can save ever more premature babies, which pushes the boundaries of viability earlier and earlier. Mm. And ultimately, although we are certainly not at that point yet, ultimately, we might get to a point where you can find a wholesale replacement for pregnancy, and reproduction will be entirely equal between the sexes. There'll be exactly the same amount of labor between men and women. They'll provide the gametes, and the pregnancy will take place outside of their bodies.
Oh, that sounds wonderful, doesn't it?
It does and it doesn't. I mean, this is it. For some people, it's wonderful. But unless we change the social conditions in which this technology is emerging, it could be potentially very damaging. It's great for some people. It's great for people who have medical conditions that mean they can't be pregnant, women born without wombs, women who've had hysterectomies, women who fear pregnancy, women whose careers mean they can't really be pregnant. It's great for gay men. It's great for trans women. It's great for people who are in situations where they are forced to choose between having medical treatment, people who are diagnosed with cancer during their pregnancies. But what it does is, by leveling reproduction and making it absolutely equal, it means that women are in a position where they can give up. They have to give up the one fundamental power that they've always had over men. And in doing that, they lose. In writing the piece, I realized that there are certain rights that women have that men don't have. So, for example, I have the right to choose not to become a parent, which a man doesn't have, which means that if I'm pregnant and I don't want to have a baby, then I can choose to have a termination, which means the baby won't exist. In the world of artificial wombs, it will be very difficult to make a case based on the right to choose for abortion, because abortion can be both pro-choice and pro-life. You can have a baby. You can say you don't want a pregnancy to happen to your body, but then it doesn't necessarily follow that the baby must die. So states could sanction for you to terminate the pregnancy, but then it doesn't follow that you as a parent, you as a mother, should be able to say, I also don't want my child to live. So there is a future where there will be children growing up whose mothers didn't want them, didn't want to be pregnant with them, which I guess is the present that a lot of men live with. Mm-hmm. And there were lots of other dystopian realities that came to light from doing artificial wombs. What happens if a state decides that a woman is unfit to be pregnant? When artificial womb technology exists, they could demand that she gives her baby up. So all of these inventions have come along with unintended consequences, as all sort of radically disruptive technology does. And it was those unintended consequences that I focused on as much as the kind of potential revolutionary benefits of the technology. Mm.
And I mean, even creating that baby in the first place, I mean, you talk about how to have a perfect sexual relationship without compromise, really without having to engage with another human being.
Yes, well, this is sex robots. It's this idea that, because at the moment you can already buy incredibly hyper-realistic silicon sex dolls. I went to an amazing factory in San Diego where I saw these sex dolls being manufactured where you can specify, I mean, you would not believe how specific human beings' choices are. You know, there's 42 different types of nipple to choose between. There are 14 different styles of labia. You can specify where you want each individual freckle on the body. So you can create something that is physically your perfect partner, but what they're now doing is putting animatronics and artificial intelligence into these hyper-realistic sex dolls so that they will be whatever you want them to be. So with that comes the possibility of a partner who, you know, likes whatever you like, wants sex whenever you want sex, and laughs at all of your jokes and is entirely there for your pleasure. And with that, the possibility of an entirely selfish relationship where the kind of the well-being and satisfaction of only one side of the partnership matters because the other side is not a human and is a machine.
So I'm slightly worried by the fact that, firstly, I love the idea of having a baby without becoming pregnant. And secondly, I love the idea of creating a perfect partner that will never disagree with me.
Yes, I think it's all superficially very alluring, and that's what the people who are making these technologies are relying upon, the fact that there is a market for all of this, because they say that they're solving fundamental human problems, but I think they're causing problems too. I think, you know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, we never would have imagined that we would all become so addicted to our smartphones as we are now, that they'd become this kind of external organ that we can't live without. I think when we get used to having interactions with hyper-realistic beings that exist purely for our pleasure, it will make relationships with other humans hard work, people who you actually have to empathize with. You can't just be selfish. When we're used to having entirely selfish relationships, I think real relationships will become harder work and we will become further atomized from each other.
Let's talk about food now, because, of course, also in the title is vegan meat. And you look at that whole question of eating meat without killing animals.
Yes. This is the idea that technology is going to allow us to have our cake and eat it, or have our steak and eat it. It's the idea that if you could grow meat in a laboratory without killing animals, you would solve the problems of industrial agriculture that are arguably the greatest threat to climate change. Many environmentalists have made that argument. And the population is growing. You know, industrial agriculture is a massive contributor to carbon. It is a massive cause of antibiotic resistance. You know, global pandemics have been linked to the selling of animals for meat and the growing of animals for meat. So there is a problem. There is an unsustainable problem. But the entrepreneurs who are growing meat in laboratories and saying that, you know, they can have meat without death are saying we can carry on consuming at the levels that we are now. We can continue. We don't have to change our behaviour because technology will save the day.
And why is that a bad thing?
Well, in some respects, it's not. It's quite an elegant solution when you first look at it. When you taste it, like I did, you realise that it's quite an imperfect solution at the moment. I will say no more than that. I think there are many issues with it. It seems like an incredible amount of overshoot engineering and effort when all that is required is actually for us to say we're going to eat a little bit less meat. And ultimately, in the world, that, I mean, the reason why I call it vegan meat in the book is at the moment, the entrepreneurs who are pioneering these technologies are all vegans themselves. And the venture capitalists who are funding it are largely vegan. So it is, at the moment, it is quite an idealistic project. In the future that these vegan meat makers are fighting for, which is a future where we continue to eat meat, but we don't kill animals for it, we will be ever more reliant on incredibly remote technology owned by very large corporations. Whereas at the moment we're self-sufficient. If you're a farmer in Vietnam, you can raise your own pigs. In the future where eating meat from animals is taboo, we are going to be incredibly dependent on technology. And I don't think that, I think it's very unlikely that it will be vegans in control of that technology in the future. If you look at how, you know, startups get bought out as they become more successful.
Mm. So we may not have to kill animals in order to eat some type of meat, but we also may get to the point where we can choose to kill ourselves painlessly. Tell us about choosing death.
I spent quite a lot of time in this radical euthanasia movement, which, well, it's called rational suicide. And it's this idea that human beings should have the right to choose when and where they die at a time of their own choosing, place of their own choosing. They should be able to die painlessly, and they shouldn't need to rely on a doctor to give them permission. And it's a movement spurred by a man called Philip Nitschke, who is a doctor. People become members of his organization, and he teaches them how to kill themselves and tells them how they can get hold of different materials in order to do it. And Philip Nitschke has invented a 3D printed device, which he says will kill you, not just painlessly, but euphorically. And it's this idea that in the future, you'll be able to download your own death. You'll be able to print this device and kill yourself in it anywhere.
Essentially a death machine.
It's a death machine, yes. There's a long history of death machines, because the thing about technology is depersonalized. So you have Jack Kevorkian in the 90s, who was inventing death machines so that people could press a button and kill themselves. By depersonalizing death, what you're doing is removing the accountability of whoever's helping you. Because if you push the button yourself, how can the person who's assisting you be accountable? So there is a history of death machines, but this particular death machine does away with assisting altogether, because nobody has to be present at all. You can just download these plans off the internet.
Now, you mentioned the ideology that's driving the vegan movement. Is that the case behind all of these inventions? What kind of person sits there dreaming up a death machine?
In the case of the death machine in particular, the people who are dreaming up would say that they are advocates for the right to die, but they aren't really. Well, they are to an extent, but they're not trying to get the law changed, because laws all over the world require that doctors give their permission for people to die at the end of their lives. These people are saying that individuals should have the right to choose. So if anything, it's a kind of libertarian position. If you look across the book, across the four inventions that I look at, the one thing all the people driving them have behind them, and they're all men generally, is incredible ambition and a search for recognition. Steve Jobs comes up a lot in the book. They want to be the pioneers behind radical disruptive technology that people will always remember. And sometimes they are driven by principle and sometimes by the promise of money, but it's always by the promise of validation and fame, really.
Mm. I mean, I guess the question at the root of the book is, are we about to change what it means to be human forever? And feeding into that, of course, is, since you wrote the book, what it means to be human has changed forever. How do you think that the pandemic will impact on any of the stories you've touched on?
All of the inventions that I've looked at have huge implications in the post-COVID world. You could say sex robots are the answer to distance relationships. You know, I can't think of safer sex possible than sex with something that can't give you a virus, can't give you an STD, can't give you anything at all. Artificial wombs. There have been incredible stories that I've been reading about surrogates in the USA and in Ukraine who are bringing up the babies that they've carried unwillingly because the babies can't be moved out of their countries. Artificial wombs would mean there's no longer any need for surrogacy. You know, lab-grown meat would mean that there were no need for the sort of wet markets or industrial agriculture that can lead to pandemics in the first place. And, you know, a death that is painless, that you're entirely in control of, is incredibly attractive in a world that is as chaotic and frightening as the world that we're living in now. But I think we have to be careful looking to technology for solutions when actually always the answers can lie with behavioural changes. That's exactly what we're doing at the moment. At the moment, we're defeating the pandemic, not with technology, because we don't have the vaccines yet, and we don't really have decent contact tracing apps yet, even though we really want them. The actual real power we have is to change our behaviour and to agree not to see each other so much. And it's painful and it's not what we want. But ultimately, that is where our real power lies in human beings, not in technology, but in changing our behaviour.
Jenny, absolutely fascinating. Sex Robots and Vegan Meat, Adventures at the Frontier of Birth, Food, Sex and Death is published by Picador. It's out now. Jenny Kleeman, thank you so much. You've been listening to Monocle Reads, thanks to the production team of Nora Hull, Sam Impey and Charlie Filmer-Court. And you can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.